All opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals and not of the organisations supporting this episode. Hello and welcome to the podcast We Transform Lives. This podcast delves into the extraordinary impact of social entrepreneurship and the business innovations driving change. The series is brought to you by Transform, a unique accelerator programme led by Unilever, the UK's Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office, and EY, which unites corporates, donors, investors and academics to support visionary impact enterprises. We tell the story of six entrepreneurs and their innovative business solutions driving social and environmental change in communities across Africa, South Asia and beyond. This podcast showcases how powerful solutions being created in communities for communities by social entrepreneurs have the power to change the world if they're scaled and supported in the right way. I'm your host, Ruthie Shah, and in this episode, we're heading to Lagos. Did you know that residents generate 15,000 tons of waste per day, of which only 40% is collected? Well, working to combat this is Recyclers, a pioneering rewards for recycling platform incentivizing people in low-income communities to exchange recyclable waste. Joining me to tell us all about it is founder Bilikis Adebi Abiola and CEO Olawale Adebi. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Hi, Ruthie. Hello. Thank you.
So it'd be wonderful to start off by finding out more about yourselves and your younger selves, because I've heard that actually you're brother and sister. So what was it like growing up?
Yeah, I think my goal in life was to torment Wale. Wale is 2 years older than me, so I was always, you know, bugging him and putting him in trouble. And he was a little bit of a troublesome child, so whenever he did anything wrong, I would report him to our parents for his own good.
Yeah, I think Bilikis is somebody that was always on my heels. We were about 2 years apart, so in terms of size, she was close to my size. And people used to think that we were twins. So every time people would come and say, oh, are you guys twins? Because we looked alike and we talked alike. And I kept saying, no, I'm older. I'm actually much older than her. And, you know, she was also much smarter than I was. So she kept catching up in classes. She kept promoted, always getting the best student awards. So I had to kind of keep competing with her, trying to stay out of her shadow, because she really was the most promising and the most gifted child. So that was kind of difficult for me.
You're so kind to each other. But before we delve into Recyclers, did you work on other projects together?
Yeah, so we loved working together. You know, Wale was always a good big brother to me. So it was always nice. You know, he went to the US before me. So I think it was about 6 months before me. So I remember when I went to school, he gave me my first computer in school, which was really nice. And then after college, we were always thinking about, okay, what kinds of ideas are we going to do? Wale got a job at a steel company, and he talked about how scrap cars were really important. And in Nigeria, there were just a lot of scrap cars that were lying around. And we even came up with an idea of doing a scrap metal business. So we had done a business plan and everything, but it just didn't take off. So we were always trying to see how we could do things together.
So picking up on that, I'd love to know more about you seeing this need to tackle waste in your community. But what was the actual inspiration, whether it's a moment or a person, to take action?
When I was in the MIT Sloan, there was a class called Development Ventures that talked about people that live at the base of the pyramid. So if you know any typical Nigerian, you know that we are very brash, very proud, very bold. And so in the class, they were talking about countries in Africa and other parts of the developing world. You know, as a proud Nigerian, when I heard all the statistics, 70% of Nigerians are poor, there's no water, there's no, you know, trash, there's, you know, those kinds of things were just, I felt really like attacked. I felt attacked. And so there was a group of people that were talking about waste. And since Wale and I had worked on the scrap metal startup before, I decided to join that group, seeing that there really was a problem, because as somebody that lives in the middle income life, I realized that I lived in a bubble. You know, our lives in Lagos were in a bubble. So we didn't even really see the kinds of suffering that people were going through on a regular basis. And so here, far away, thousands of miles away, was where my eyes got opened to this issue and where we were able to get the help we needed to start something that actually looked like it could make sense. And so the idea for Recyclers came up, and we decided to go back to Nigeria to start it up and test it. That was even before we had graduated from Sloan. So we went to Nigeria for a few weeks in January of 2012. We had an event where we had people in the community come and bring their trash. And it was just overwhelming to see how much trash these people brought with little or no notice. So went back to school, a few months to go to get our MBA. And if you know MIT, there's so many competitions at MIT that you can, you know, apply for money for. And so we decided to, you know, see how that goes. Let's apply for all these competitions and see. And by the time we graduated with our MBA, we had raised a few $1,000s, and we had got into an accelerator that allowed us to start the business. So that was really where we decided that we're going to start Recyclers.
But what was the environmental goal for you both? Because were you on board together from the very, very beginning that there is a problem in Nigeria? This is where we can do something about it. Or was it that perhaps Wale was driving it, or that you were driving it, Bilikis? How did that actually happen?
I think, you know, Bilikis was courageous enough to start up Recyclers pretty much on our own, on an idea. And, you know, we both didn't have, I would say, any idea or notion that we would be working in the waste sector in Nigeria other than the scrap metal idea we had. I think that was the big driver for us. What really drove, I think, Bilikis to go into Recyclers was what she saw as the issue at the bottom of the pyramid. I think, you know, when they ask us, why did you guys do Recyclers? I think for me, and I think for Bilikis also, it's more about the issue on poverty than anything else. So because we have a lot of people that live under the poverty line in Nigeria and, you know, limited incomes, what was, I would say, the Eureka moment was seeing an opportunity for them to make an income, right? So for us, it's really about helping people create wealth and be able to generate wealth from the waste that is around them that they don't even have the ability to eliminate. I was working at a steel company as an engineer while Bilikis was starting up the company. And honestly, you know, she was really kind of doing it on her own with very limited resources, which led me to provide the loan she mentioned and even provide some support in terms of how she structured her, you know, management style and also even operating style with regards to the company. And when I moved back in 2016, I came back home thinking I would just not work with Recyclers, just do something on my own. I went to the hub where she used to work, and I was amazed at how much she had been able to accomplish. I mean, it was overwhelming to see how much stuff was out there, and I saw all the women sorters working hard and really dedicated to the mission that she had already put together. And so I was convinced at that point that I couldn't leave. So that was what really led me to stay and work full time, because I was moved by the amount of effort that people were putting into this. And it really made me realize that that was a goal that was worth sacrificing a lot of things for. So that was kind of when I was sold on Recyclers in 2016. And, you know, I've been with Recyclers since.
The things that I want to pick up on is that it's been evolving quite considerably over the years, but you were clearly ahead of the zeitgeist when it came to topics around environmentalism. But you do say it's about social justice here and poverty. But in terms of those successes, where have you had really, really super proud moments?
People didn't really get it. You know, it didn't really make any sense, because we're saying, oh, we have bicycles and we're going to collect trash. And people were like, well, don't they already have trash trucks? And then you have to explain to people that, no, there's no trash trucks. In fact, there are no roads for the trash trucks to go on. So there was a competition that we had entered into. And despite this huge obstacle of actually explaining and having people wrap their heads around it, we were able to win, I think, second place, which was huge. And that gave us momentum to say, okay, look, let us dig deeper into this idea. Even though it seems crazy, there really is something there, because we've been to Lagos and we've seen that it's really needed. And then when we got to Lagos and we saw people, you know, there was really nothing like this that had ever happened before. So you would walk up to a random person in a community and say, hey, give me your trash. I'll send somebody down once a week. And you know what? In three months' time, we'll give you something, depending on how much you've earned. And that initial conversation, where the person has no context, no background on this, getting people to convert, that was really, I think, that was cool.
Yeah, and I'll just kind of piggyback. In terms of other successes, you know, when I joined Recyclers, I would say that, you know, the team had really been successful in gaining a lot of momentum in the space. What we were focused on was really trying to put structure into the company and to allow us to grow and expand our collections. And we started a lot of ideas on a very small scale pilot basis. So for instance, we had a kiosk collection model that we started out really by chance. And we were able to work with a partner as Unilever. Unilever has been a partner with us since 2014 and has been a really solid partner. And one of the ideas we pitched to them was to really deploy these kiosk collection systems across, you know, Lagos, which will allow us to expand our collection base. So Unilever sponsored this project, and we were able to increase our collections twice. So we doubled our collections by this particular expansion. And for us to see it actually grow so quickly was a huge success for the company, because it was the point where we were able to see that there was an opportunity to actually make a financial case for WeCycler. I think in the early stages, it was about building and really showing that this concept was possible to work. But when we're actually making enough revenue to pay salaries consistently, and also to actually allow us to slightly and grow in a more very marginal way, I think that was a huge win for the company to really show that, yes, this company has legs and there is a future that we can really push towards. So for us, I think that was another key win, was the ability to show that we were able to scale if we put the resources behind it.
So picking up on that element of why not and going to the obstacles, were there any sort of moments where you went, I really am having a bit of a tough day with this, or we really need to move forward? How are we going to do this?
Yeah, there was one I talk about. It was early on in WeCyclers, was when the first time we did the redemption. So now WeCyclers does redemption with cash, which was after I left. Wale brought that in, and I think that's amazing. But I was, you know, really focused on, look, it shouldn't be cash. It should be in kind. So we were giving people things. So like if you, depending on how much trash you give to WeCyclers, you would get something. So we had told people to come to the WeCyclers hub, line up, and we're going to go through your items, what you've given us, and we'll give you your reward. And I guess I should have known something was wrong when there was a woman that said, look, oh, this is my laptop. Because I was bringing my laptop out of my bag. And she was like, I'm sure that's my laptop, right? And so, and this is somebody that was just giving us trash. She actually thought she was getting a laptop, but I thought she was just joking. So like the whole thing just broke out into chaos, because when we gave people their items, people got butter, things like that. They had this like unrealistic expectations that they were going to get, somebody thought she was going to get a house, you know? So like they had these big dreams of the fact that their little amount of trash was going to get them these big things. And when we ended up giving them, plastic buckets and butter, they were the whole place was scattered, and I had to like be evacuated from the place and I had to go home. And I just decided, I said, you know what, I'm actually going to just show up tomorrow, walk around the neighborhood and see what they're going to do. Because if I don't show up, they'll think I'm a scammer. So I came the following day, like walking around thinking they were going to attack me, but nothing happened. And then after that, people like became more realistic in their expectations.
I love that. So that element of sort of showing up. I mean, I wanted to ask you about how you contributed even more so to the local community, but I guess there's inspiration there in terms of the narrative, in terms of also making sure there's not any miscommunication. But I'm going to step onto that element of helping the local community. Are you able to give us any more examples? You've given butter, maybe not laptops, but anything more that helps those that are around you?
Yeah, so I think that one of the things that we were able to see, and to Billy's point, you know, the gifts were nice in terms of the initial phases to actually allow people to connect waste to incentives, right? But what we quickly realized was that, you know, the money was what really was what people were after. And I think initially we didn't realize that people could actually bring significant volumes to really make a lot of money, right? But what we found out was that people could bring a lot of volume. So people were bringing an average 200 kilograms a day. So for us, it was like, why not just give them money? So we quickly found that if we incentivize with money, that people would actually bring a lot more than what we thought they could bring, right? So there was actually a higher potential of collections that were out there that we were not tapping into. So people started bringing, when we started paying cash, people started bringing like insane amounts of material. So 200 kilograms a day equates to about a ton a week on average, which is a lot for one person to bring, but people do that. And what we are finding is that there's an ability for people that have no jobs to make money to take care of their family much more than what anybody could ever imagine. And one of the things that is very characteristic of recyclers, subscribers, that's what we call our people that bring recyclables to us. Our subscribers are mostly women, and in a lot of cases, they are actually widows. Some of them are widows or single women or single moms that have two or three children and don't have jobs. So one of the unfortunate situations is that a lot of them don't have the skill set or the education to really have consistent jobs. So this is really the only means of income that they have. And they're, you know, maybe in the middle age, older age. So it's harder for them to go out to look for work. So that is a huge impact in the community. And in a lot of our hubs that we go to, this is the way that people are sustaining their families. And they will tell you stories of how, you know, recyclers was what gave them their esteem to actually have, you know, the self-esteem, to have some dignity in terms of what they have, to have money. Some people actually bought land. They are building a house for their family. People are paying their children's school fees. So that, in a, for us, is the value of what we bring to the community.
Fantastic. And I'd love to find out more about Transform and how the Transform Initiative has helped further, because I know you mentioned it earlier. But one thing before we do that is, you talked about the volumes and how a lot more was coming in than you were initially expecting. How? Like, how did people bring that much volume together, especially bearing in mind who you say are the subscribers? Are they getting family members involved? Is it bringing further community together?
People are very entrepreneurial in Nigeria. So you would see that some people would, you know, get people that would work for them, and they would actually tell them, you know, they would engage people to work for them to gather the waste and, you know, put it together, and then recyclers would collect it for them. Some people that would also rent, you know, a small bus or a small truck and bring it to recyclers. So there were lots of really innovative ways that they had utilized to make sure that they were able to get high volumes and get money.
In addition to that, I think we saw a lot of people that didn't have any jobs, essentially any full-time jobs, utilize that free time that they had to go out and find these volumes. And the material is out there, right? What we focus on is in low-income communities where there's a lot of, you know, beverages consumed with bottles, because there's not a lot of potable water. So people have to drink bottled water or beverages. So there's quite a lot of these materials outside available. Some of them go to parties on the weekend to collect all the plastics at the parties or cans at the parties. So yeah, there's availability. Really what they just found is that this is value. So they just went after the value.
So you've created mini economies off the back of your initial idea, from my understanding. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Absolutely right.
Wow. That's all I can say is wow. And now heading on to Transform, and just to dig a little bit further, if that's okay. So you got the support from the Transform Initiative. It has helped recyclers. But again, can you just give me a little bit more detail about how it helped you with the scalability? It helped transform the project.
Well, I think Transform, very distinctive for me, 2019, I think, is when we actually got the Transform grant. And it was a transformative phase for recyclers. And I don't want to, no pun intended there, but really what that was able to allow us do was to really be bold. It forced us to be bold, because recyclers, you know, a lot of our growth had to be incremental. We didn't have any huge capital. We didn't have, you know, deep pockets to really invest in capital to go out and expand. But when we had this Transform grant, what it allowed us to do was to really dream big and go for a project that we felt that would allow us to be, you know, to be audacious. And for so Transform was the first time that WeCycler was able to go outside of Lagos in a significant way. So we're able to go over 1,000 kilometers to a new location to set up a hub and a franchise. So that was a huge opportunity for WeCyclers and the first of its kind for us. It allowed us to engage 7 franchisees. So we took our business model that had been working for years that we were running, and we actually were able to get other entrepreneurs to work under our umbrella, to have their own sorting centers, to have their own baling machines, and to be able to be entrepreneurs on their own. So it allowed us to really take our model and put it in a system that was able to scale much more quickly than we were able to. And so those things we wouldn't have been able to do without that support. So I think Transform gave us a platform to grow. It also gave us something to be confident about. It actually gave us the audacity to scale the company and grow. And luckily for us, thankfully, we were able to actually secure additional funding to open up 26 new franchises, which is huge for us. And we wouldn't have been able to do that without Transform.
But how do you maintain control as well? How do you also make sure that the scalability is something that's realistic? Does Transform help in that way?
Absolutely. So one of the things that it made us realize was that instead of focusing just on what we were good at, which was, you know, running hubs, we now begun to put in systems in place. Because the Transform project didn't just focus on, okay, just go and open up a bunch of franchises and, you know, have more plastics. It actually focused on, were the systems in place to support the franchisees? Did we have proper PPE at all the franchises? Was there adequate training? So it made us think about putting structures in place to support our franchise model. So we hired a franchise manager, and we even developed a franchise contract agreement to ensure that franchises were abiding by contract and, you know, safety handbooks. So there were so many things that the Transform project allowed us to do as a company that we wouldn't have done if we were just doing it by ourselves, because we were just focused on operations as opposed to putting in the structures to allow us to be able to sustain the franchise model.
And I'm going to pick up on that, because we were talking earlier about the fact that, you know, your brother and sister, that you've had this great relationship and, you know, you've worked in business. How has that affected your relationship too, in terms of being these business partners?
So I stepped back from WeCyclers in 2017. Wale became the CEO of WeCyclers, and he was the one that drove the Transform. I think it helped me, and it gave me a peaceful peace of mind, because before the Transform grant, just seeing that, you know, WeCyclers, it was tough for WeCyclers to raise money, you know, from the private sector, and just seeing that, you know, the Transform grant was something where somebody very, very credible had put in a big, you know, big bet on WeCyclers and was willing to support WeCyclers. That gave me a huge relief, and I was very happy.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we have is we can't overstate it, that we have a very good working relationship. We have a lot of trust. You know, Belikis has a lot of trust in me, and I have a lot of trust in her with regards to our work, and the passion that we both have for WeCyclers is the same. When we're doing things, she's obviously our biggest cheerleader and always rooting for us to be successful. So I think we've always had that support, and she's. Essentially, anytime there's a major shift in the company, obviously, I'm always letting her know, keeping her in the loop, but she's always supportive of that. Like, you know, this is I believe in you, and I believe in the company. So that's always reassuring, you know, to have someone that believes in me and my ability and the direction I'm going.
I want to take that business acumen that you've clearly developed over the years, the pair of you, and factoring in the Transform initiative and how it supported you. If you think about the value of initiatives like Transform and the fact that so many social entrepreneurs don't find it easy to survive, with the additional business acumen that you've developed over the years, why is it so important to be able to have that sort of support?
I think, you know, it's very difficult to develop a business model that is sustainable. And that, I think, it's like a make or break for an entrepreneur. If an entrepreneur is lucky enough to even make it to that point where they know they've built a business model. If it's not a business model that is a sexy one, you know, investors, because they tend to go in packs. So if it's not one that is a sexy one, it's very difficult to raise capital. I think WeCyclers experienced that. You know, we're very fortunate that we were able to be creative about raising money. So we worked with companies because we had a value proposition that companies bought into, because we're helping them to clean up the packaging. But there are some people that are not that fortunate, and it's kind of sad. But I think there needs to be a very, very definite push, you know, around funding to really look at how we can provide entrepreneurs that are providing social services with funding. So even if it's not initially based on, you know, money, maybe if there is some kind of way to monetize or to value the impact that they are providing, there should be some funding for that, maybe in the forms of grants, to enable them to grow to a point where then they can become investable. I think that's a big one for me.
Yeah, I agree with Belikis. one of the challenges that we've definitely faced is the fact that we're in a sector that is very nascent in our country. We're also in a country and a region that is quite difficult to invest in West Africa. It's quite difficult for investors to come in because of a lot of, you know, volatility and instability. And then you have a situation whereby local infrastructure is still very, very early and backward. So investors look at that and say, well, we're going to have to pay for this, this, and this before we can actually get the return on an investor. So conventional investors are pretty much out of the game at that point. So you need to look for investors that really understand the value of the work that we're doing, as opposed to just looking for a conventional return.
I was going to pick up on that. Bearing in mind where you were at the start of this journey, you know, being like, okay, there's a problem here in Nigeria, there's a problem globally, we're seeing issues around poverty as well as the environmental impact. Factoring all of that in, could you ever have imagined at the start that this is where you'd be now?
Not in my wildest, like, dreams. I don't even know what I wanted to do, honestly. It was just like, oh, let's try this. Let's see how it goes. You know, and there were some things that we've actually discovered now that we didn't even realize were going to happen. Like Wale mentioned, we thought people were going to bring 1 kg of trash like a week. And some people are bringing 1 ton a week. That's crazy. We didn't realize also that things like unemployment, youth unemployment, a lot of young men got jobs with recyclers. And that was a huge side thing that we didn't even realize we're going to benefit. And even the extent of the impact, some things like when we go into the hubs and we see how much plastic we collected. So there were some times when we're like, you know what, even if we shut down today, like, it's going to be irresponsible of us to shut down because we are packing this much plastic from the community. If we didn't pack it, where would it be? Or when we think about the people that are earning their wages, like, you know, those were the things that kept us going. Like, if we stopped, how are these guys going to make it?
I think to add to that, we definitely are ambitious, right? So now it's at a point where we can begin to actually dream big. I think early on, there were just a lot of different challenges to overcome that it was hard to really imagine that we could grow to the point where we are today. I will be honest, even for me, when I look back in 2016 and what we're doing today, it's night and day. So we're actually exporting plastics. We're dealing with, you know, international customers. You know, multiple containers a month now of plastics are going to foreign markets. You know, and that was probably not even in my radar early on because of how little or how small we began. We began literally with one bicycle, and when I joined WeCyclers, we were still dealing with bicycle issues. Like, the chain on the sprocket wasn't working well. And the shaft of the bicycle, we had to optimize the shaft. I mean, that's how minute the issues that we're dealing with. So, you know, just imagine now you're dealing with more commercial issues, expanding, thinking about building our own recycling plant. So we've definitely come quite a ways.
Fantastic. And one of the other things I just wanted to sort of check in with you and ask, there's always been that commitment to the local community. So in terms of the future plans, how are you ensuring that the community around you, the community that you've brought along with you on this journey, is still going to be part of this journey?
Yeah, I think we just want to make sure that, like you said, the community is with us along the way. Point system is an integral part of our model. So for every kilogram of trash that people get, so in a way, they are like investors. So for every kilogram of trash that they recycle with WeCyclers, they get something back. And we want it. I think our dream has always been that, you know, the people that we're working with, there should come a day where they don't need recyclers, you know. They don't need the money anymore because they've been able to get themselves out of that situation and they have better lives. And they're just recycling now because it's good for the environment, you know. And that's really always been our dream because we realize that it's important to recycle for the environment. But for you to have this conversation with people in low-income communities, they won't even engage with you because they're thinking of things like, oh, how am I going to eat today? My children haven't eaten. And you're telling me to pick up plastic because it's good for the environment? Like, it's not even going to register. And we've started to see that. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day, and she was saying how, you know what, I like the money, but I've noticed how, like, there's less flooding, there's less malaria because we've cleared this plastic from the drain. So they've seen that this is important. And, you know, I'll be happy.
Yeah, and I'll add to that. One of our main offices, which is in the Lagos Islands community, where we work, we get sometimes up to 3 to 4 tons a day of recyclables dropped off at that location. So it's quite prolific. And that location, that community is plugged into WeCyclers in a very deep way. So it's like, well, like Vicky said, we're like the bank, right? So we when they come for the like quarterly redemption, we give them cash or we help them open up bank accounts. So this is a way for them to really get financially included by being part of WeCyclers. In addition to that, you know, Belikis has come up with something in recent times about, you know, open up a food kitchen. And that food kitchen is something that we do annually to allow people to, you know, that are, you know, less fortunate to provide, you know, meals for them, you know, during this month period. Right now, it's ramped up to over 700 meals in a day. People have been given out of that same location. So I think a lot of people look at us and say, well, these guys are doing a lot of good. They're providing us money in our pockets. You know, they're doing a lot of good. So we want to see ourselves as that type of company that provides something for that community. So every community that we're in, we're providing value by giving them the ability to help take their families, but also to actually give them something back that, you know, nobody else is giving them.
So finally, if I can ask you, if you can, what would be the one piece of advice that you could give to people, businesses, entrepreneurs who are thinking about starting up and making just a change in their own communities?
I would say, I mean, one thing that I remember that's helped me a lot was don't give up. So if you have a bad day, just go to sleep, wake up the next day and continue.
I agree. I think for me would be to be very resilient, and it's very similar advice in business, particularly as a startup or working in social impact. There is a lot of difficult challenges to overcome, and that's why we're doing it, right? So, you know, once you pick your path, you really have to be resilient and ensure that you believe in what you're doing and you stick with it. You know, you don't give up regardless of the obstacles that are in front of you.
So resilience and not giving up. And I guess that question which you raised earlier of what now, what next, why not?
Yeah, why not? And I think another thing I think that helped was that we had done some modeling for WeCyclers. So we had this like very intricate model of where we were going to be in 5 years. And we're like, oh, this is going to be $1 million company, multi-million dollar company. And so like on tough days, we'll go open up the model and I would just like keep clicking around. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is, we can still do this, you know? So like just having that, like my eye on the prize to know that, look, I'm actually not crazy. This actually can be done. And it's true. I think that helped too.
I feel so inspired by this conversation and I'm really hoping that our listeners do too.
Thank you so much to Bilikis and Alawali for such an inspiring and in-depth conversation. It's been fantastic to learn so much about WeCyclers and I wish you all the luck with your future plans. Thank you to everyone listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate and subscribe to it wherever you find your podcasts. If your business is interested in being part of the Transform Initiative and supporting impact enterprises, or if you're striving for change and would like to work with experts to develop your business, visit our website, www.transform.global. I'm Druthi Shah, thank you for joining us today. And remember that together we can tackle global challenges and transform lives through enterprises that drive impact.